The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Prospect.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Meyer Hum has had a long, distinguished career as a phys ed teacher with 35 years of dedicated service to the youth of Timberley Prospect Riding. Meyer introduced downhill skiing to her students and is planning the annual trip to Wentworth for the past 18 years. She has developed a winter program to loan out snowshoes to the community and was one of the founding members of the Prospect Road Bulls Basketball Association. She coached the first mini girls basketball team for 6 years, from mini to adolescence. Meyer established a cross-country skiing club after school, and she still cross-country skis throughout the winter. Meyer began a running club at both her schools. She introduced the Blue Nose Kids Run to PRES and AMTP schools, and they have participated for the last 11 years. Both schools have been presented with banners for the last 10 years. Meyer has always gone above and beyond as a teacher and a role model for her students. She lives an active, healthy life and has installed those values in hundreds, if not thousands, of students whose lives she has touched. I'd like to join me in wishing Meyer Hum great happiness in her retirement. Thanks.
Order, please. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to Minister, the official leader of the official opposition.
Thank you, the official speaker of the official speakers. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. Daily commuters across our bridges here in Halifax deserve to know that they are getting a fair deal from this government. In 2011, the Halifax Bridge Commission was allowed by the URB to raise our rates by 33%, Mr. Speaker, based on an estimated cost of refurbishing the McDonald Bridge of $220 million, and I have that here, and I'll table it for the benefit of the House. We now know, Mr. Speaker, that the actual cost will be much less. I'd like to ask the Premier, has his government taken steps to ensure that those savings are passed on back to commuters?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I will take the information that the leader of the Conservative Party has brought forward, but I want to remind all members of this House, as the URB is an independent body from us. They would have been worked with the Bridge Commission, but I am very pleased that everyone is working towards ensuring that our roads and transportation infrastructure are safe for all commuters.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, for the benefit of the Premier and members of the government, in 2011, the URB approved a 33% increase, taking our tolls up to a dollar for non-users of the Metro Pass, because they intended to spend $220 million refurbishing the McDonald Bridge. The cost of the refurbishment is going to be at least $35 million less, according to this briefing note, which we obtained under a Freedom of Information request. All of that money, Mr. Speaker, should be returned to the commuters who pay those tolls every day. In light of that information, I'd like to ask the Premier, does he agree that if the bridges are collecting more money than we know they now need, will he take steps to see that that money is returned to consumers?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as I said in my first answer, we'll take the information to look at it, but the URB is an independent body. The Bridge Commission is running that piece of infrastructure. I'm sure all members of this House know the deficit the bridge infrastructure has had. But ultimately, Mr. Speaker, this is simply about making our transportation infrastructure safe for all commuters. The information that the leader has brought forward, I'm sure if the Bridge Commission feels like they have too much money, it'll go back to the URB. All of that, Mr. Speaker, will go on as it normally would.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, for that commuter in Fall River who has to cross the bridge to get to work twice a day to downtown Halifax, Mr. Speaker, the Premier's answer sounds an awful lot like the answer the previous government used to give about the URB on power rates. Well, Mr. Speaker, when the Premier was in opposition, he instructed the government then to intervene with the URB to protect ratepayers. I'd like to ask the Premier, will he consider the same steps now that he's in government, to protect commuters on our bridges?
The Honourable Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I thank the Honourable Member for bringing the question to the floor. I said we'll look at the piece of information. I'm very pleased to hear that through the work of the URB and the Bridge Commission, work is coming in under what was believed to be the budget process. I don't know the methodology used by the Bridge Commission or the URB to settle on the rate hike, but as I said, the information will come forward. We'll look at it, and I'm very pleased, quite frankly, that people are focused on ensuring that our transportation infrastructure is safe. Because I know the Minister of Transportation to continue to work with communities across this province to make sure that is the case.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question for you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, yesterday BCE announced that they were eliminating some senior management positions at their head office here in Halifax, and we know that more cuts are on the way as part of a plan to reduce spending in this region by $100 million. In a year where the province has saw a loss of more than 9,000 jobs under this government, more job loss, good high-paying job loss, is always a concern, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier is this. What discussion has his government had with BCE to try and reduce the potential job losses resulting from the takeover of Bell Aliant?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to assure the Honourable Members, I'm sure all members of this House have recognized that it has been communicated to all Atlantic Canadians that the head office would remain here in Halifax. We know that over the last number of years, Mr. Speaker, there's been some attrition and job opportunities in this province, but we also have to recognize, and I was very pleased to hear yesterday some of the announcements that were coming out, that hard-working Nova Scotians, Atlantic Canadians, Mr. Speaker, were landing top jobs in that private sector entity, and they were going to be located right here in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, yesterday on CBC, a business professor at the university here at Dalhousie, Mr. Dave Shaw, spoke about these job losses and said that, every time someone leaves from one of these high-paying jobs, they take with them money that they've been spending in the community, and it's something that we need to be worried about. So my question for the Premier again is, can he tell this House what impact the loss of good jobs at the Bell Aliant headquarters in Halifax will have on the provincial economy?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind the Honourable Member that Bell has committed to keeping their headquarters here in Nova Scotia, here in Halifax. There was an announcement around about jobs that were being filled by Nova Scotians, by Atlantic Canadians that would be located here in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, this is a private entity that is making a business decision based on what they believe is in the best interest of their business model. We're going to continue to work with all employers to ensure that there's economic opportunity here in this province. I'm always pleased when I hear national companies use Nova Scotia as their base in Atlantic Canada. We continue to see that. And we're going to ensure to send them a great signal that we're going to manage the finances, Mr. Speaker, of the public sector.
I'm a leader of the New Democratic Party on our final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, I know that the Premier likes to talk about how he's going to leave the growth of our economy up to the private sector. But, Mr. Speaker, we've seen more than 9,000 jobs leave this province in the last year under the strategy of that Premier. We know that Bell Aliant or BCE are looking at taking $100 million out of the regional economy, Mr. Speaker. So my last question to the Premier is this. Why is it that he is sitting back and being so cavalier about the potential loss of high-paying jobs from a region that sorely needs them, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to assure her that we're going to do everything we can to ensure that this province continues to remain a destination for national companies when they're locating their headquarters for at their Atlantic headquarters, Mr. Speaker, here in Halifax. I also want to remind the honourable member that when that announcement was made around the takeover, there was also an announcement of a successive amount of investment in wireless, Mr. Speaker, research that would provide opportunities across this province, allow entrepreneurs to move forward. And I want to remind the honourable member, this government closed the checkbook. That government was writing blank checks. No, let me get this. Let me rephrase that, Mr. Speaker. They were allowing someone else to fill in the blank check while those jobs were leaving, Mr. Speaker.
The honourable leader of the official opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, the ban on onshore development is not even in place yet, and yet the minister has already said that he's going to someday repeal it, Mr. Speaker. And I will table that from the allnovascotia.com article this morning. The bill's not even passed. The government's already walking away from its own ban on onshore gas development, Mr. Speaker. But my question to the Premier, fact is, they already have the ability to consult and to study with the current rules in place. So now that we see the minister saying he'll enact it and then repeal it later, he'll put it in law and then rip it up, why is enacting and then repealing a law better than simply following the current rules?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to remind the Honourable Member that what the Minister of Energy is doing exactly what the Wheeler Report had said, Mr. Speaker, that we should not be entering down the road of fracking at this time in our history. We should be going out, consulting, doing research and understanding, Mr. Speaker, whether or not, first of all, we have the resource, how do we extract it, and what do we do with the fracking waste, Mr. Speaker? As we all know, fracking has taken place in this province. Through the Minister of Environment, we've been dealing with the mess that was left behind by the previous government. Mr. Speaker, if the leader of the Conservative Party thinks fracking waste is a joke, he should go tell the people of Amherst why is it they should have to take it, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, the only joke I see here is a government that's going to put a ban on jobs, and then when the heat's turned up, they say they can always rip it up later. That's no way to run a province, Mr. Speaker. Fact of the matter is, there is the ability now, as the Wheeler Report pointed out, to simply not issue permits while all the consultations take place. But the government didn't do that. They didn't follow the Wheeler Report at all. Nowhere in the Wheeler Report does it say, make it illegal, put a ban on onshore gas development, and then if people don't like it, rip it up later, Mr. Speaker. You have to show me what page in the Wheeler Report it says that. So the Premier has said he's not banning anything. Minister of Energy says he's banning it, but he'll rip it up later. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the Premier quite simply, is there a ban on onshore gas development or not?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to reassure the leader of the Conservative Party, Mr. Speaker, that we're going to continue to do what we have done for the last year, which is consult with Nova Scotia, ensure that all Nova Scotians are part of the conversation, Mr. Speaker. We're going to follow the recommendations by the Wheeler Report, which says make sure you consult in this province. I'm sure the leader of the Conservative Party recognizes that it is the law in this province. It is our duty to consult with Aboriginal communities around resource development or any other development. We're going to continue to make sure that we follow the law. And, Mr. Speaker, I don't think anyone in this province has said this government has moved away from backing away from legislation because the heat's turned up, Mr. Speaker. Just the opposite. They said, finally, we've got a government that stands its ground and makes sure it does what's in the best interest of all Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, last January in a government release about the provincial exhibition, the Minister said an audit will help clear the Commission's new Board of Directors to get a clear understanding of its current finances and help them chart a plan to a sustainable future. And also, Mr. Speaker, this step will provide assurance to the Truro Bible Hill community and various groups that use the facilities at the Commission as a viable future. I will table that, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister is this. Can the Minister describe for this House, almost a year later, how much this audit is going to cost and how this audit has helped the new Board of Directors so far?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a very important question indeed for the Truro area, Bible Hill area. And indeed, the audit is still ongoing. We hope to have it completed in another 6 months. We have hired a new manager to operate the facility, and we're running ahead of schedule on the progress to improve the facility and indeed to make it profitable long term.
Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, thank you for that response. In that same release dated January 28th, the Minister goes on to say an audit is not just about ensuring the Farm Loan Board's loan is paid, it is also about ensuring that the Commission deals with its outstanding debts to all creditors. And also, it was said, I commend the Commission's new Board of Directors for its efforts to ensure the long-term viability of the Commission and its facilities, and am confident an audit will ensure all that. Mr. Speaker, my question is this. Can the Minister show this House that the Commission is running a viable operation by tabling the current financial statements for the provincial exhibition, and how much his department has spent on operations of the provincial exhibition to date?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, we're doing very well on the exhibition. We're making a number of changes in the facility. We'll make it long-term profitability of the facility, which is critical to the community, and we will continue on that route until we're very successful, and we're well on the way.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of ERDT. Mr. Speaker, last week, after months of speculation, the Liberal government finally announced the members of the Nova Scotia Invest Nova Scotia panel, chaired by Tom Travis. My question for the Minister is, why did it take so long to appoint the panel? The New Brunswick government, the new Liberal government in New Brunswick, have announced a similar panel within a few weeks of taking office.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Speaker, as I'm sure the leader of the NDP would know, we were elected on a mandate to fix the problems in economic development. We have taken our time to do that, similar to another famous Nova Scotian. We took our time to get it right. Mr. Speaker, we're very impressed with the Nova Scotians who brought their names forward to serve on Invest Nova Scotia. We're very excited by the opportunity that this board will now have to make investments on behalf of the people of Nova Scotia, to do so independent of government, and to do so in supporting sectors and helping entire sectors of our economy grow. And we look forward to the board meeting very soon as part of an orientation, and then starting to consider proposals that will be coming forward as a result of that. Merci.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for the answer. Mr. Speaker, on Friday, Dr. Travis said that it will take some period of time for the new board to get up to speed, and he predicted that it would take them as much of a year to become mature, as he called it, in their operations. So my question for the Minister of ERDT is this. With the loss of more than 9,000 jobs from the province in the last year, in the interim period of that 1 year when this board will actually get to mature, who can we expect to be minding the shop and helping the Nova Scotia economy, which desperately needs some help, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Well, Mr. Speaker, Invest Nova Scotia is but one of the tools that we are using to help grow the economy of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, I would encourage the leader of the NDP to go on our website. In fact, I may have not mentioned this before, but we have an accountability website here in Nova Scotia now. If I'm not mistaken, we're the only province in the country that has such a website, which will show the work, Mr. Speaker, that has been done by Nova Scotia Business Incorporated, the work that's been done by Nova Corp, the work that has been done by our department in making investments on behalf of the people of Nova Scotia to help grow our economy. Mr. Speaker, we are very pleased to see that Nova Scotia companies are coming to us with a spirit of optimism, with a spirit of growth, and Mr. Speaker, they're doing so through the independent arm's-length agencies that we have established, not by unelected, unnamed people sitting in the Premier's office.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Agriculture. Last Friday, during question period, in response to questions regarding the unfair treatment of rural Nova Scotians who want to raise their own turkeys, the Minister responded by saying, "The Turkey Board has the authority to shut down operations that aren't approved by either federal inspection or provincial inspection." He went on to add, "We are presently working with the Turkey Board to make some changes in the process," and I'll table those statements. Will the Minister elaborate today on those changes that will assist rural Nova Scotia turkey farmers from being run out of business by the Turkey Marketing Board and the Government of Nova Scotia? Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you very much. This indeed is a very important topic for our government as we move forward with food safety in our province, and this is a food safety issue as identified by the Turkey Board. We are definitely working with the Turkey Board to see if we can put facilities in place, and also with processors in the province to see if we can put some facilities in place to ensure that all the processors can do this in a safe manner and a properly inspected manner.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for his answer. The government has essentially handed significant control, though, to the industry panels, such as the Turkey Marketing Board. They have wide powers to generate their own regulations of sorts. These can be overturned by the government, however, through the Governor in Council. The Minister could regain control of this whole fiasco around small turkey farmers and processors by taking charge and using these powers provided by him to him under the Natural Products Act. Will he today commit to rural Nova Scotians to use Clause 17 of the Natural Products Act, along with some good old-fashioned common sense, to exempt small processors from the one-size-fits-all approach of the Turkey Marketing Board?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you again for this very important question. It all goes back to food safety. We have to ensure we have food safety in all the products we eat in Nova Scotia, and as part of my portfolio is in making sure we have food safety. For instance, anyone that's involved in a church supper or anything like that, you have to have one individual that's had a training course around food safety. And indeed, as we move forward to resolve this problem that's been identified, we will have food safety as number one priority, but we also understand the needs of the small farmers in the province of Nova Scotia, and we're going to try to blend the two of them together to get a solution to this problem.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is also for the Minister of Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, the Minister continues to use the Turkey Board's lines, and that is not acceptable to thousands of Nova Scotians or to this House. Last week, also in response to one of our questions on unfairness of treating small turkey producers the same as large producers, the Minister responded, "This is about food safety. This is about a court case." Indeed, they tested this in the past, and it did not go through court. It was appealed, and the people and the Turkey Board did win the case both times, and I will table that comment, Mr. Speaker. My question, Mr. Speaker, for the Minister is, can the Minister identify which part of that case was regarding food safety or anything to do with the slaughtering of turkeys?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
This court case, and I don't have the information with me today, but I will table the information on that court case, was in 2002, and it was from a process that was not inspected from my, if I recall properly, that said we should be able to process these turkeys without being licensed by the Turkey Board, and indeed the Turkey Board did win that case, and on appeal they won the appeal.
The Honourable Member for Kings North on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for the Minister for that answer. Mr. Speaker, the case the Minister refers to actually began in 2002, was finally settled in 2009, and had nothing to do with the slaughtering of turkeys. What was it really tested was the sweeping powers of the Turkey Board, and I will table that. The farmers in question were initially fined for unspecified infractions without a hearing. The Turkey Board then threatened to withhold the licenses until their files were placed in good standing, Mr. Speaker. Files, Mr. Speaker, not food safety. Mr. Speaker, my question is, why did the Minister suggest that the 2002 and 2009 appeal involving the Turkey Marketing Board were matters of food safety?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
And indeed, everything we do in the province around processing of any kind of meat product is around food safety. And we have to continue monitoring food safety to make sure that we don't have any catastrophic problem happening, and someone get very ill or indeed somebody dying because of improper handling or processing of any kind of product in the province.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Energy. Currently, the Utility Review Board is considering how Nova Scotia Power should recoup cost of $100 million in unpaid fuel costs from ratepayers, Speaker. Now, Mr. Speaker, while the consumer advocate has stated that those costs should be reclaimed over a three-year period starting in 2015, this government, in a letter submitted to the URAB just this Friday, and we know how much the Premier loves the independence of the URAB, stated that it would prefer the recovery of those costs be delayed for at least another year. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to you, to the Minister, is this. Why does he disagree with the consumer advocate?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I think it's interesting to hear the NDP argue for a rate increase for Nova Scotians, but we always argued that the government should be fighting for ratepayers, and that's what we're doing there. Moreover, Mr. Speaker, we have presented to the board a number of pieces of evidence which show that the fuel, the deferred amounts of fuel can continue to decrease without going back to ratepayers. And in fact, they've already decreased this year to $86.7 million, which is almost $13 million, or more than $13 million more than expected, and we believe it can continue to decrease without the need to go back to ratepayers.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, I enjoy listening to the Minister and his crystal ball, but Mr. Speaker, the reality is that the consumers, the ratepayers of this province, are out $7.1 million. And an authority that he may not accept as higher than him, but we would do, is the consumer advocate who says, pay it next year. He wants to wait another year. So I want to ask the Minister, why is he allowing NSPI to earn $7.5 million on the backs of hardworking Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure what the $7.1 million the Honourable Member is talking about, but the reality is that, if he's talking about interest, he's not talking about net interest, because in fact ratepayers have been overpaying on the other side of the ledger sheet and earning interest from Nova Scotia Power on the other side, which more than offsets that amount.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. Mr. Speaker, it's brought to my attention that there may be a proposal to bring petroleum from Western Canada to the East Coast, which could boost rail traffic between Truro and the New Star Energy Transshipment Facility in Point Tupper. My question to the Minister, did the Minister receive any information regarding this proposal?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank the Honourable Member for the question. The answer is no, I haven't received anything of that nature. Obviously, as the regulator, I'm sure we would have that information in terms of the impact on the rail. For us, you know, any developments in New Star in the Strait in Point Tupper would be welcome news for our economy. But, of course, we'd always balance that with rail safety. So should that be the case, we'll certainly look into it as the regulator and make sure that the products are traveling safe and sound across our railway. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'm sure the Minister of Energy will share some information there with the Minister of Transportation. Mr. Speaker, several people have raised the alarm over the state of this rail line's infrastructure. I am aware that several sections of the entire line have go-slow orders due to safety concerns. Cleanup costs from the Lac Megantic disaster have been estimated to be approximately $200 million. The company responsible reportedly carried $25 million in insurance and have recently gone bankrupt. Genesis and Wyoming, owners of the Cape Breton and Central Nova Scotia Railway, meet the minimum insurance standards, which appears to be approximately $15 million in Nova Scotia. The question to the Minister, does the Minister agree that their coverage is somewhat inadequate?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, with respect to Transport Canada guidelines, as the regulator, our province and all provinces that operate rail systems adhere strictly to those standards. For us, there's a set amount of insurance that is required by law through our federal partners. And if there's questions about the level of insurance, then certainly I would suspect that they would be conversations that I would have with our federal counterparts. At this point, Transport Canada have the ultimate hammer in terms of compliance with respect to the rail safety, with respect to insurance and other administrative matters. So from my perspective, that's something that the member could ask Transport Canada to verify that they have adequate insurance. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is through you to the Minister of Health. On Friday, the government announced the makeup of their new health super board. Instead of having 10 CEOs across the province, there will be 8.5 vice presidents in Halifax, and there will also be 8 executive directors. So my question for the Minister of Health is, now that the executive structure of the super board has been announced, what is the total budget for implementing the super board, including executive severances?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as the Honourable Member knows, that figure is impossible to determine at this moment, because we don't know who those 8.5 VPs will actually be. Therefore, those who will be receiving severance is an unknown entity at this stage. And I guess until that group are selected and in place, we can't determine the exact figure.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Earlier this spring, the NDP received information from the Department of Health identifying various district health authorities' amalgamation costs, and I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. When I asked the Minister about the cost, and I'll table that also here, sorry. I asked the Minister about those costs on October 1st. He said, and I quote, "That's a very fair question." However, Mr. Speaker, he refused to tell Nova Scotians what it's costing to implement their super board, Mr. Speaker. So I'm going to ask again to the Minister. After over a year of moving towards amalgamating the district health authorities in this province, the government must have a cost that will the taxpayers of Nova Scotia will incur because of this amalgamation. Can the Minister provide that cost?
Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What I can tell the member opposite and all Nova Scotians is that we will be saving a minimum of $5.5 million in the next fiscal year, and every year, just based on that 50% reduction in administration, which is the platform for additional health transformation in the coming years.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development. As he knows, last session I introduced a petition in the House of Assembly with over 800 names on people that were very unhappy with the service that Eastlink is providing them on wireless internet in southwest Nova Scotia, particularly those from about Pubnico Head going into to Cape Island and around to Backrow Point. And I do know there's a number of individuals in the Yarmouth area, too, that are very unhappy with their service. So I'm just wondering if the ministers had the opportunity to look at the Eastlink contract and maybe give us a bit of an update.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Mr. Speaker, thank the member for the question. As members of the House will recall, the broadband initiative started in 2006 with the goal of being able to provide connectivity to high-speed internet to all Nova Scotians. Unfortunately, while it was certainly a goal that we would have hoped the province would have achieved, there has been some challenges along the way, especially in the areas that the member represents. In southwest Nova and into the valley. We continue to work closely with Eastlink to try to find solutions for not only the residents who don't have high speed, but as well those who have connectivity but are certainly not getting the level of speed that they should be getting. As well, Mr. Speaker, as I've said before, we're certainly looking forward to the funding that will be coming from the federal government's recent announcement of increased speed of 5 bits per second, which we expect more details to come out soon.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And really what's happening is those people that are paying a decent fee to Eastlink, don't have anybody to call when they're having problems or are not getting called back. We're getting connection speeds of less than 1 megabit per second, if they can connect at all. The service is actually deplorable in southwest Nova Scotia. I do hope that there is going to be some funding coming along for improving this system, because what we're hearing from Eastlink, when I did have an opportunity to chat with a couple of individuals there, is that the radios are old, they do need replacing, and they're waiting on the further contract from the provincial government on how to proceed with the next step of the broadband initiative. So I do hope that there's going to be a program.
Is there a question there?
I do hope there's going to be a program coming from, so I'm just asking the minister whether there's a program coming up in December so that there can be an improvement in the service.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Speaker, again, we await details from the federal government. While they've made an announcement of their intention to see the connectivity speed increase throughout the country from 1 to 5, we await the details. We do not have those yet. Once we do have those, we'll be in a better position to see what role that the province can play in that. In the meantime, we continue to work with Eastlink to try to find solutions that exist. Again, unfortunately, solutions that are problems that have been in essence since 2006 when this initiative was first started, and we do hope to see that those individuals will get connectivity very soon.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question for you is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, I think we've all been startled by details coming out about the alleged conduct of a very prominent media personality lately, and it's caused us all to reflect on how little things have actually improved for women who are sexually abused or harassed, even assaulted at work. So in light of the attention this issue has received recently, I want to ask the Premier, what steps is his government taking to ensure that workplaces in Nova Scotia are safe and free from sexual violence against women?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to also inform the House, as she knows, coming in the last campaign, we committed $2 million to a sexual violence strategy in this province. We continue to work through the Minister of Community Services, the Minister responsible for the status of women, to ensure that workplaces across this province are safe from violence. Mr. Speaker, we also want to ensure that households across this place are safe, that women and children feel safe in their own home environment. And it will be a collective responsibility, one that the government will be part of, one that we'll be looking for our community partners to be part of, but we will need to all Nova Scotians engage to ensuring that every Nova Scotian feels safe, whether they're at work or at home.
Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I really appreciate the Premier's response. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia has the highest rates of sexual assault in Canada, so I want to ask the Premier, what actions is the government taking to create an environment where Nova Scotian women feel they can report sexual violence and expect due process?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as I said in my earlier question, we have committed, Mr. Speaker, with the resources that we believe are required to ensure that the infrastructure continues to be improved. I want, though, to make certain that all members of this House, all Nova Scotians, recognize that we have a responsibility to encourage the women who are faced with sexual violence or violence of any kind, that there is the support infrastructure in place, that when they come forward, we will support them, Mr. Speaker. We will do all we can to ensure that they feel safe at work, at home, and that they feel safe and that their children, Mr. Speaker, feel safe in this province.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Municipal Affairs. 1 month ago, after question period, the Minister of Municipal Affairs kindly met with Rhonda Frank, owner and operator of Artsy Fartsy Art Studio. Rhonda's business was shut down, but a business on the same lane in Chesacook continues to be open. Will the minister please provide an update on what is being done by his department to help correct the unfair situation that has closed down Rhonda's business?
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank my colleague for the question. Yes, we did meet with Mrs. Frank and her husband, and the circumstances that she's dealing with were shared in great detail. Staff within the department, in consultation with Transportation Infrastructure Renewal and HRM, continue to work on finding a solution that would be in the best interests of Ms. Frank.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Before I arrived over here today, I had the opportunity to speak to Rhonda, and she expressed how frustrated she is with the inability of not having anyone return her calls and have a conversation with the minister's department. She is a woman who has attempted to follow all the rules in order to offer a service to people in her community that is much needed. Will the minister commit to contacting Rhonda Frank himself today to reassure her that a solution is being worked on? Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, I thank my colleague for the question. In fact, staff from my department have had contact with Ms. Frank, and Ms. Frank has acknowledged that in correspondence that she forwarded to our office, advising us of additional steps that she is taking. We will continue to communicate with Ms. Frank in the effort to find a solution for the challenges she's facing.
Hey, the Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Minister of TIR. And no, it's not the New Boston Road. The effort to remove the MV Miner off of Skattery Island has been underway for a period of time now by a strong Nova Scotia company, and to the relief of the residents of the local area. I wonder if the minister could provide an update to the host on how this project is progressing.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question, and truly, on behalf of all members of the House, it really is a great thing to see him back here in the chamber with us today, so we're happy to see him. Mr. Speaker, as for the MV Miner, which the member's been a tremendous advocate for, the cleanup, we've joined forces many times over the last number of years to fight that battle. I can tell you that RJ McIsaac is doing tremendous work. I had the opportunity to see the vessel a month ago, and folks, it would do your heart good to see this massive rotting ship on the shores of a beautiful, pristine island like Skattery. We are getting there, Mr. Speaker. There are a number of challenges with the weather, of course. It's a tremendously complicated and certainly a dangerous project. RJ McIsaac is faring off pretty well. They're happy with their progress. We're still shooting for a November date for completion. We're going to let the experts in the field and on the ground there, RJ McIsaac, indicate the exact timeline. But right now, things are progressing well. There's new information that is available, and we're going to work through that and see where we can come. But at the end of the day, we are having some significant process on the MV Miner.
Thank you. The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
I want to thank the minister for his answer and his kind words, and maybe this would be a good time to ask about the New Boston Road. Mr. Speaker, through you, I would like to ask the minister if he could tell us, if the timeline is not met that was proposed in the contract, is there any penalties that will be paid by the contractor, or is there a contingency plan in place for that timeline?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, it is it's a complicated project. One of the things we've identified this week through RJM was that there's an additional amount of both asbestos, which is a tremendous, tremendously dangerous product, as we all know. There was the original green passport report said that there were 6.6 tons of asbestos on the MV Miner. RJM to this date have actually removed 30 tons, so significant numbers. In addition, we are given an assurance, Mr. Speaker, that there was no diesel fuel left on the vessel. We are now learning that there are significant amounts of diesel fuel left on this vessel, which is in a very lucrative fishing ground. So I think, in my opinion so far, we haven't verified the information, but I think it certainly strengthens our case with the federal government to say that this is an environmental contamination and an environmental issue. Once we have that information verified, I'll certainly share with the member, and we may have to take up this case again with the federal government to see if we can get some help. But this is certainly new information that is very concerning for the people of Manadu and the Skattery Island. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through to you to the Minister of Education. Asbestos was discovered at J.L. Isley High School on Friday. According to CTV News, the asbestos was contained inside tar particles that fell in the library and the audiovisual room, and I will table that news story. Mr. Speaker, My question through you to the Minister of Education. With teachers and students returning to the classroom this week, what can the Minister of Education tell us about the testing done for air quality at J.L. Isley High School?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to thank the member for the question. It was certainly brought to my attention as soon as the asbestos was identified, and I know that the staff at the school board and at the school took every precaution to ensure that contact between students, teachers, and the area of contamination was addressed, and that the testing that was done to ensure that the environment was safe for both staff and students to return, and I was assured that that testing was done. It was safe, but no student would be put in an unsafe situation.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to thank the member for her answer. And certainly asbestos raises the warning bells with parents. CTV News was advised by one parent that he will be convinced the air quality is safe after he sees the results of the air quality tests. So my question through you to the minister is, will the Minister of Education direct the school board to release the results of the air quality study to put parents' minds at ease about their concerns?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member. It is extremely important that parents are provided with the accurate, most current information available. They, too, are concerned about the safety of their children, and the school board has a responsibility to ensure that any and all information is communicated to the parents. Initially, the parents were informed of the situation, and I certainly will be ensuring that the follow-up information to guarantee that the space is safe will also be shared with the parents.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, there are people receiving palliative care at home who are suffering from breathlessness. They are close to the end of their lives. Oxygen therapy relieves a feeling of suffocation when they are gasping for air. Imagine a nurse having to decide if oxygen can be provided outside the hospital setting based on funding from the local community or the patient's own ability to pay. Mr. Speaker, why are we paying for it in the hospital but not for people at home?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for that question. As we all know, this is an area that is undergoing considerable change. If we think back just to a very short time ago, we had pharmaceuticals that were used in the hospital, not covered in the home. That has changed. And so this whole area of palliative care, now that we have a director for the province, this will be one of those areas again that will receive evaluation.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for that comment. We often boast, of course, in Canada about how wonderful our Medicare system is because it's free. But in this case, Mr. Speaker, the Palliative Care Society of Inverness has spent over $10,000 just this past year alone to provide oxygen at home for these people. Will the minister reconsider the policy, and it sounds like they are looking at it now, and report back to this legislature with a decision to fund oxygen therapy when it is prescribed for psychological support or for really any form of breathlessness?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As we all know, that with the new provincial One Board, we will be developing programs right across the province. In terms of palliative care at the moment, there are many variations of the practices, the protocols, and even the availability of top-notch palliative care specialists. And I know that once we have the provincial system in place, a provincial palliative care program will be one of those that will be addressed. It certainly is indeed one of the needs that we need to look after.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Transportation. Mr. Speaker, in the last five-year construction plan, the Cornwallis Bridge in Kentville on Highway 359 was scheduled for replacement. This vital link to residents of Kings North has been in dire need of replacement for several years. Mr. Speaker, my question for the minister is this. Can the minister update this House on the scheduled replacement of the bridge and if all the necessary preliminary work and design have been completed so this project can be done next construction season as scheduled?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank the member for the question. I don't have the specific details on what the timeline is for the Cornwallis Bridge. Obviously, that's something I can bring back to the House. I know that the preliminary design work has been undergone through the department officials, and I can bring an update back to the legislature as soon as possible.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to thank the minister for that answer, and we look forward to that update. Also, Mr. Speaker, the Cornwallis Bridge is a vital link to the town of Kentville and virtually splits the town in half. The core business and some residential are on one side of the river, and the health services and more residential are on the other. Can the minister tell this House what plans are there to keep traffic flowing over the river while construction of the new structure is built so vital links for this community are not compromised?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, thank the member for the question. Certainly when it comes to bridge rehabilitation, replacement, and all the work we do on our highway and infrastructure, the plan for mobility and the plan to get residents, businesses, commuters around is paramount in the design phase. So for us, we'll have a safe passage that's well thought out and planned. Our traffic control system is second to none in North America. We do a great job getting people through. So when that the design portion is ready and available for the Cornwallis Bridge. Certainly, that's something that we will communicate to the public, but, Mr. Speaker, we'll get them to where they have to go safely. That I can assure the House. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last week, we learned that the Town of Amherst is planning to allow Atlantic Industrial Services to dispose of treated fracking wastewater through its wastewater treatment system on the Tantramar Marsh. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Environment. The residents are concerned and shocked about this, so will the Minister require the Town of Amherst to extend its consultation period before issuing any necessary approvals from the province?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At this point, we haven't received a formal application for this process, although, of course, the Town of Amherst is having some discussions and initiated some public consultation, which just took place yesterday. As far as this process, certainly the town has some decisions to make, and they'll be going through presumably proper channels with their constituents, the people of the area, to have those conversations and make sure that they're comfortable, because we will have to get a letter of authorization or approval from the municipality if they were to choose to move ahead with this agreement with AIS, the company that has the wastewater to be disposed of. But at this time, Mr. Speaker, we haven't seen any complete application forms, so we're not part of
that. Order, please. Right, time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. Just before we move on to government business, the Honourable Member for Sackville Beaver Bank.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm just wondering if I could make an introduction.
Permission granted.
Mr. Speaker and the whole host, I'd like to recognize in the East Gallery my CA, the CA for Sackville Beaver Bank, Sylvia Frazier. I just want to add that Sylvia, many of us know her as Sylvia Sinclair, but just recently she got married, and now she's Sylvia Frazier.
I will also take a moment to do another introduction just before we move on to government business. I see the Minister of the Environment saying no. In my tradition of recognizing